Music Zettel
with James Humberstone.
Welcome to Music Zettel, a podcast about engaging students in creative, pluralist music making, drawing on my own work as an academic, as a teacher, and a composer and producer. And as usual, all of the music is created by me, although one week it was created by me through AI, or maybe created by AI through me. This song is a stimulus work that I created for a project-based learning week. I do these project-based learning, it's actually 2 weeks every year in a course that we teach here at the Sydney Conservatorium that my colleague Tom Feenberg and I say is the most important course of all of the courses that you do in your teacher training course. In the Masters of Teaching, it's imaginatively called Music Curriculum 1. Fairly similar course, more or less the same kind of stimulus and just assessed at the master's level. But we say it's the most important course because it's where we do the training for teaching the mandatory part of music. The bit of music that I was talking about as being very important in the syllabus, the new syllabus that we got here in New South Wales recently, because it's the only time that most young people in our state, and in fact in Australia, although we have different syllabi in Australia, it's still pretty much the same state that most children will have with a trained music teacher, with someone who is actually a musician in the classroom doing guiding their learning. Very important course that we give our students all of the skills to think about how they can really be engaging music educators for all kids at that particular point. And this these project weeks come at the very end of the course. And what happens over those 2 weeks is that every single year I design a new project and I make stimulus material myself, and I do the project myself first. I've talked about different kinds of project-based learning and things like that several times over the 3 seasons of this podcast. And if you have ever done my free online course, The Place of Music in 21st Century Education, I go on about project-based learning. In fact, what I call the BLs in there. I say the BLs, that's a Humberstonian term. It's not something that you'll find in the literature. But what I'm sort of making clear there is that there's lots of different kinds of something-based learning. I can remember back in the early 2000s, Apple working on something called challenge-based learning, which was deeply technology integrated. Of course, it was integrated with their technology, which is fair enough, I suppose, if they were funding pedagogical structures to be developed by teachers and academics. Challenge-based learning had its own flavor. I went over, and I've mentioned this in various places that I've done public speaking. I went over to San Diego in 2012 and was lucky enough to learn about project-based learning at schools where they teach everything through projects called High Tech High. And there are also other kinds of BLs-based learnings, problem-based learning, inquiry-based learning, and each one has its own, particular flavor, particular ideas, and that's not to, dismiss any one over the other. I think that they're all really, really interesting and worth studying and worth trying out in your classrooms. But I try to cover them all over these 2 weeks, the different ideas behind them, and I just wanted to talk about, call it PBL or project-based learning in this podcast, because I just wanted to talk about the kind of projects that I've done over this is the 12th year of teaching this at the Sydney Conservatorium with our pre-service music teachers. I cannot remember all what would be 10 projects, because that's 11 years done so far, but 1 year of long service leave. So yeah, we do. You know, I've invented lots and lots of different projects, and I've made five or six bullet points here of things that I did that I thought I might tell you about. But the ingredients of lots of the BLs are very similar. The idea that you you have a real life outcome. In some of the BLs, they talk about, you know, big problems in the world. So you know, the sort of, you know, how can students tackle climate change, conflict, those kind of ideas. And I think those are wonderful and engaging things, but maybe not always the things to get students involved in real life music projects. And I'm always a little bit worried that music can become a thing on the side. I did cross-curricular BLs in my time as a classroom music teacher, and I generally found that the ones that were centered around music was where the most music learning happened. And if it was something like, you know, working with science and art to do something to do with the environment, which I did actually do a project around those lines. That the project was really about science and then had a soundtrack made by music and a poster made by art. And it just kind of felt like the arts were kind of tacked on. Whereas if I start with music, and I think, for instance, there's a film that needs scoring or something like that, then the music is actually the central thing. So that's not to say that you can't do interdisciplinary project-based learning, but I think just from the music point of view, you've got to think about how music can actually be a real outcome in there. The go-to person for this, by the way, is Jeff Robin. He is the OG art teacher at High Tech High. You can find him on the social medias. He's got some absolutely brilliant publications out there that you can get off his website, which is simply jeffrobin.com, and an amazing book that he brought out a couple of years ago called... Is it Teach Like an Artist, I think it's called. Isn't that wonderful? Imagine Teach Like a Musician. There's a book that I would like to write, Teach Like a Musician. So yeah, Teach Like an Artist. And, you know, all of his ideas from years and years and years of doing projects with kids with fantastic real life outcomes. Another thing that I learned at High Tech High was the idea of working with industry or working with experts. So they would partner with universities in San Diego and get their students to, you know, go and spend time in the bay investigating nature and things like that with scientists from the different universities. Real life outcomes. Obviously, we tend to think of projects as student-centered, lots of student autonomy and freedom and constructivist in nature. That's to say that students construct their own learning. But I think that some people sometimes think that it's a little bit free range. And I can guarantee you that there is way more teacher preparation that goes into teaching a good project than there is into teaching, you know, from the textbook or straight out of the points straight from the syllabus. When you design a project, very often, well, you start with a stimulus, which is something that I took from challenge-based learning, where they would always say, you know, go and make a video because it's got that technology thing. I always make a video. And the other thing that I learned from Jeff Robin was do the project yourself first. If you go and look at his what is PBL, what is project-based learning videos, he talks about the importance of doing the project yourself first, because you, the teacher, how can you, the teacher, expect students to do things if you can't do them, haven't done them yourself? And it's a great way of reverse engineering and seeing what the outcomes are and how, where students might get stuck in the project and that kind of stuff. But it's not just setting up the project that takes all of the learning. It's because you've got very specific learning outcomes that you want the students to make, and you might need to, as well as doing all of that planning in advance, hoping that they'll get to them, you might need to do some backwards engineering, some backfilling to make sure that everything that you hoped would be covered by the project is in fact covered by the project. So even though a lot of the time in class might be about students exploring and doing their own work, you are very, very active at as the teacher, trying to make sure that they hit all of the things you want them to hit. And so, you know, I could just do the same project every year, obviously, especially if I found something that had an annual real life outcome. But I don't. I always enjoy going through the process myself, and it keeps it creative for me. You know, some of these projects are very similar in outcome. But the music that was playing at the start, as I said, was trying to use my own music on the podcast, was a song written for a competition, Solaria competition. What is Solaria? Solaria was a voice created from a real human voice, lots of samples, but put into a special voice synthesis engine. So a computer program that can then take words and notes, sort of notes put in as sort of MIDI data, you know, what the pitch and the timing is, with syllables, words underneath the MIDI data, and then sing it for you. And because it's based on lots and lots of samples of a real human voice and some cool technology, it can then sew it together and make it sound like a singer. So let's just go back into the song now and have a listen to where the voice comes in. You've only heard the introduction.
Finding out who about ya.
That's going to divide some of my listeners. Some of you will think that's completely incredible and wonderful, and some of you will think that that's horrible and artificial and whatever. But anyway, I love that technology. And look, I've talked before in the AI podcast how wonderful the idea that students might be able to sing a song and then have their voice, you know, turned into Taylor Swift or one of their vocal heroes. So, you know, similarly with this technology, I think students who are maybe afraid to sing or don't have much confidence in their singing, the idea that they might be able to write a song and have it performed, you know, whether or not you like the sound of the vocal timbre, I think is an exciting technology. Anyway, that was a big shout out to one of my students, Josephine. I'll just use her first name in case she doesn't want to be fully identified, but she did come along to that class after she found that technology and showed it to me, and the fact that they had a competition going on. And it was really, really wonderful to... The timing was really incredible in that the technology was released, a free version of it, a light version of it, and that they ran a competition to see who could write the best song for that voice. And it sort of closed about a week after the semester closed. So it meant that I could, you know, create lots of tutorials showing students how to use it, stimulus, write my own song, you've just been listening to, get the students to enter the songwriting competition. So there is an example of a real life outcome. I'm very sad to say none of my students actually won the competition, but that doesn't matter, does it? It's the aiming for the real life outcome. I just want to come back just before I go on about other projects that I've won. So the Solaria competition is one of my first. Another point I want to make just before I go into the other things that I've done is that we're very, very lucky in music education, because if we're doing it well, if we're doing it properly, if we're doing it in line with the best research, theory and philosophy in music education, everything's a project. I don't think that's even contentious. So I'll give you an example, and I want you to use your imaginations here. I'm going to give you an example of some project-based learning that I think fits quite well for music. So what we're going to do is, I want you to imagine this. You find some music, call it repertoire if you like, songs, whatever, that you think a group of students you've got at your school might play. You teach that music to them and then you get them to play that music in front of other people who aren't in that group. We might call that a concert or a gig. So, I mean, you know, this is bread and butter for music educators. This is what we do every day. We perform, we do gigs. Hopefully, we're all convinced that doing creative stuff, making music, composing, producing, songwriting is also really important. You know, that's my shtick. Therefore, what is the outcome for that? I mean, I'm completely comfortable with writing music just for myself, but giving students the opportunity to, wow, who's running their own record label, hey? It's possible. Their own SoundCloud channel, having concerts in assembly, students performing their own songs, student radio broadcasting student music. You know, it's pretty easy, isn't it, to think of real life outcomes, because that's what we do in music. We learn to make it. We learn to make it up. Gosh, lots of lovely themes going through this podcast season, and then we share it with people. So, you know, I don't really feel like project-based learning in music education is a contentious idea. It's a pretty simple idea, and I know there will be a few teachers there, worrying and saying, oh, but we've got to teach the concepts of music, or we've got to make it all fit into topics. That stuff's very, very easy to backward engineer. If you design an exciting project with real musical outcomes, you will have ticked so many boxes in syllabi, and presumably you're differentiating for the students in your class. Therefore, everyone hopefully is just being stretched a little bit, being challenged a little bit, and therefore, you just are going to be meeting syllabus outcomes. I think, yes, I promise. I mentioned last week, I've got a planned podcast that I haven't yet been brave enough to do, called Don't Teach the Concepts or Elements. But yes, again, that idea that learning about music, you know, theory, oral, musicology, history, all of those things can happen tangentially with learning music rather than as its own separate thing. Our syllabus here actually says that's how it's supposed to happen. But you know, that's one of the keys here. So yes, everything is a project. Project-based learning, music education, everything is a project, as long as you're teaching music education well. But let me tell you about another, the other ones that I've done. So if you remember the week 7 podcast, I played you, there was a David Attenborough speech, and I mentioned in fact that I had created that sort of orchestrated speech with gamelan samples, which were some of David Attenborough's field recordings, and that was one of the project-based learning fortnights. So he released, I don't know, was it for his 80th birthday? It was commemorating something. He released a load of field recordings, and they had a competition to remix the field recordings and make something beautiful out of them. So my students remixed and entered that competition, and we all, you know, made nice music about that. I've gone down the jingle route a few times. The popular Australian entertainers, but at the time they were making a podcast, Hamish and Andy, we're asking for podcast stings, and we all made those for the stimulus video. I think they had just sort of, you know, asked on their podcast for people to make little, you know, jingles or little stings, and I didn't think that was a good enough. I didn't think that was a good enough stimulus. Just, you know, playing students that bit of one of their podcasts. So what I did was that I actually found a TV interview with them about a new TV show they were making, and I cut myself, I videoed myself and cut myself over the top of the interviewer. And so it was like me interviewing them. And I changed the topic of whatever that interview was about so that it somehow made it about us writing podcasts for them. So I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, that was one of the ones we did. And I said we've done a couple like that. The other one was for a pirate radio station in the UK. So what happens is that it's a cricket radio station. I am a tragic cricket fan. For those of you who know me personally, you'll know that it's not something that I talk about on this podcast, because this is all about music education. But I love going to the cricket. I'm a member of the SCG, watch a lot of cricket at the Sydney Cricket Ground, and I also play cricket still, even at my ripe old age. Anyway, this is a pirate radio station because you can listen to cricket on the radio, but quite often it's geo-blocked, which means that if you're outside that country, you can't listen to the radio broadcast from that country, and there's all sorts of complicated, copyright reasons that are really annoying and that affect people's enjoyment of the sport. And so the pirate radio station is literally some people in a living room in someone's house watching it on TV with the volume turned down on the TV and commentating and then sending that out over the internet, which isn't illegal. So I don't really know why I'm calling it a pirate radio station, but you know, it's got that kind of pirate vibe to it. And on this particular radio station, Gorilla Cricket, you can look it up, you can stream them. They usually have a recording of one of their broadcasts going on their stream, even when there isn't a live match. But the Ashes were coming up, which is, for those of you who are outside Australia or England, it's when those two countries play cricket against each other. I'm not going to give cricket details in this podcast. I think I'd lose half my audience. But basically, it's a very important thing in those countries if you like the sport. And they have jingles for each player and jingles for things like when a certain score is reached or, you know, anything like that. And so my students made some fantastic jingles, and those jingles are still to this day played on that pirate radio station, which makes me laugh a lot. I might donate some money to them via Patreon, so I tend to keep in touch with them, and there's lots of fun back and forth. So that was real life, and those students, I did actually capture their jingles being used online on a live broadcast, and played that to them afterwards so that they could hear that real life stuff happening. And so the fifth one that I wanted to mention, which there's a lot of this kind of stuff around, but we entered the Zurich Film Competition one year. It was a film competition that actually had an entry fee, so which wasn't insignificant. I think it was around $100. So it wasn't insignificant, but what I decided to do was I couldn't afford to pay that for every student in the group, for obvious reasons. So what we did was we sort of had a vote at the end of the 2 weeks, and we entered the winner. And every student got to vote for a project. They could vote for their own project. But we had two lecturers on that year, myself and Brad Fuller, who I was interviewing last week. And we had a slightly heavier vote. We then put those forward to the competition. Generally, if you're interested in this kind of thing, then that's the way to go. That's very much the work I'm doing at the moment. I'll be starting to teach the project in 2 weeks today. So I've more or less decided what I'm going to do, and I'm about to start working on doing my own version of the project. But I've spent a lot of time searching online for film competitions and also for remix and songwriting competitions. So I'd be very, very interested if you know of any competitions, if you were to share them with me. There might be more blog posts that could come about that, or future podcast episodes, to give people the opportunity to write songs for real world outcomes. Competitions is definitely a great way to go. So there you go. I guess, yes, including the remix idea, that's six different project ideas for you. But I guess the other big message is, in terms of project-based learning in music education, hey, everything is a project. As long as there's some kind of public outcome where we get to share the music that we've made in our classes, we're doing project-based learning, aren't we? And we're balancing all of that student-centered stuff that we know has to happen in music. You don't get good at music without practicing. And practicing is about as student-centered as you can get. The student learning by doing it again and again and again until they get better. How very old-fashioned and boring of us. But yes... Also, those wonderful cultural experiences of playing music and singing to and with other people. Project-based learning. I'll leave you with the rest of my song for Solaria from the competition a couple of years ago. Thanks for listening to Music Zettel.
Was written, presented, and produced by James Humberstone.
Music in this episode was composed by James Humberstone.